I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and I'd like to contradict that. Anything can be great except us.
Yeah, we're losing in the polls. I didn't even know there was a poll. Yeah, we got blown out in the first round.
This snuck right up on us. I am like stunned.
I think there's some collusion going on here.
Yeah, those blasted Russians. We'll
anyway, back to the real world.
We have with us today Joey Mercer from our buddies over at NASA.
NASA, good.
Good morning,
say
guys.
It with me.
We love NASA.
Anyway, the hot-button issue, I can't believe how many people are involved with UAVs this year. Everybody seems to be doing UAVs.
That's right. Do you guys have any?
Yes. Well, actually, my son and I are both 107 pilots.
Oh, okay.
And I just have a little 3-inch guy that I fly in the house.
So far, the only success I've had is with actually hitting obstacles.
Okay.
I've done that a bit, too.
It's its own skill. That's fine.
Yes, it's not easy, is it? Not easy to find that tree out in the middle of that giant field.
Yeah, there's nothing there, but there's that tree, and it's a UAV magnet.
So you guys are working with integration into airspace. Everybody's doing that. Everybody, I mean, it's a huge problem. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, so there, like you said, there's a lot of people that have these vehicles. There's a lot of people that are using them, and there's a lot of people that would love to be able to know more about their surroundings so that they could kind of be better about how they use them. And so the work we're doing at NASA is really a part of that.
When you got hired to NASA, I doubt you had that in mind.
That's true. when I got hired at NASA, I didn't know, I couldn't even spell ATC. It was kind of a dark time.
Right, yeah. Right. But now you guys are doing research and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now our research, our current project is called UTM, and UTM stands for UAS Traffic Management. UAS is kind of like your technical term for drones, and so we're interested in building an automated traffic management system for drones. So if you imagine large numbers of drones flying around over longer distances, the issue becomes when those distances go beyond the visual line of sight of the pilot, that pilot now is unable to ensure the safety of their operation. And so a traffic management system is needed to kind of help ensure that safety. And the kind of the analogy of today's commercial air traffic control system with human air traffic controllers, those amazingly skilled individuals, that wouldn't quite map to what you would need for something like a system for drones, because there could be larger numbers of them and it would be much more difficult to maintain. So building kind of an automated thing, or at least sort of designing something that could get to a scalable and a more automated level, is sort of what we're starting with.
You're referring only to unmanned. Are you also going to be dealing with autonomous? Is that part of your picture as well? The totally autonomous drones that, like, you know, the Amazons that are dropping packages, is that part of that goal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're like right in the wheelhouse of this project. So one of the things that is a nice success early on in the project is our partnerships with different members of private industry, other agencies in the government, as well as sort of universities. Partnerships is one of the strengths in this project, and some of the kind of companies that you mentioned are partners with us, and we've been working with them from the beginning to make sure that what we're designing still kind of meets their needs and at least considers their needs.
I think part of your biggest issue right now is nobody knows what those needs are yet. It's changing so rapidly.
That's true. It's a challenge. There is one of the things that we hope to learn during this research are those roles and responsibilities. Who are the stakeholders? What kind of things do they need to accomplish? What can the FAA and NASA do together to kind of make sure when we start building something and putting this together, it actually does enable these new types of operations that don't exist today?
Now, how long have you been working on this project?
Since 2016, I want to say, is when I started. The project was already going in 2015, but I feel like I came a little bit late to the party.
Well, how many times have you had to totally revamp your thinking now because the average drone has changed so much?
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing to see that variety. For this particular project, it focuses on what's called small UASs, unmanned aerial systems, USS, but small UASs kind of categorizes those vehicles as 55 pounds and below. So we're not looking at the whole range of kind of autonomous vehicles, but even within that small UAS space, there's a huge variety. You got your fixed wings ones, you got all manner of multi-rotor vehicles, some noisy, some less noisy, some surprisingly high endurance, some less so. There's just the way they maneuver and operate is really, really different.
Yeah, so that's a can of worms.
Well, you know, you're talking about airspace here and everything. Now, if you're dealing in a very crowded sky and you have a semi-autonomous drone heading out there and you say you have a collision course set for this, what kind of a communication system are you going to be using? Will you be talking directly to the pilot, or are you going to be talking directly to the drone itself?
So what I personally like about our project is it tries to set you up for all of those options. So we don't want to just have like one or the other. So you want to be able to kind of support all types of those situations. So the basic idea is that a vehicle operator would be kind of working with some form of a service provider, this UAS service supplier. You could think of them as almost like kind of like a Verizon or an AT&T kind of equivalent. They're just a service provider. They do stuff. And so when they submit their operations to their USS, this UAS service supplier, then that USS takes on a pretty important role of monitoring that operation. So let's say you're sharing your telemetry data with that USS over the course of your flight. Then that USS can then compare your position reports to what your original intention was. So if you said you were going to fly in Area X and then your position reports start to get far away from Area X, then that service supplier then is kind of on the hook to notify you that things are maybe not looking so good. And then that's an opportunity for you to correct. That's also an opportunity for the service supplier to maybe notify neighboring operations so that they can have an awareness of what's going on.
That brings to mind a big question. My son and I were talking about this last night. The drone data capability, drone ADS-B, blah, blah, blah. There's an infrastructure that does not exist yet to guarantee communication to all those drones. I mean, have you guys talked about trying to piggyback onto cellular networks, that kind of thing?
Correct. There's a big issue with connectivity and knowing that you may not always be able to guarantee it. And so being, like we talked about before, just being flexible is a big piece of this project. So we have we've worked with partners who use ADS-B. We've worked with partners who use LTE. We've worked with partners who just use command and control link down to their base station and then regular internet in. So we've looked at a lot of options, and we're making sure that our system is able to support any of them.
Okay, so you multi-mode communications has to be there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and even a mode where there is no communication. I mean, if all of those are gone, there still needs to be a way to kind of keep these things safe.
Yep.
You guys have got a monumental task ahead of you, that's for sure. Because you had said cell network, and that popped into my mind right off the bat. Cellular communications, because cell towers are practically everywhere.
There are plenty of places there are not, though.
Oh,
that's the thing.
No problem there.
And again, you also have the situation where you've got different cell companies.
Yeah.
And considering your cell phone talks to AT&T, but it's not going to talk to Verizon.
Right.
The drones need to be operating across all the cell providers if that's your communication network. You can't have one locked to AT&T or Verizon or whatever.
That could be very well true.
Yeah, you never know where you're going to fly, who's going to be there.
And you can't even guarantee that in some of the more remote locations that you'll even have cellular service.
Right.
Some of the areas out in the Midwest, you have got diddly out there.
Correct.
There just
isn't. That's what it says on the
density.
Chart. You know, diddly.
Diddly.
This
yeah.
area is diddly.
Diddly.
I came up on my cell phone the other day.
Yeah.
Your service is diddly.
Well, these are all questions I'm sure you're rolling around in the think tank. Are you getting to a point where you're trying hardware?
So this year we're focusing on a flight demonstration called TCL-4 internally. TCL-4 stands for Technical Capability Level Number 4.
You know, NASA has a wicked acronyms department.
We do very well
yes.
with acronyms. We do very, very well. So TCL-4 is the kind of the current mindset now, and TCL-4 is the fourth of four TCLs. And so right now we are enjoying kind of flight demonstrations that focus on kind of the more challenging and the more complex of the flight demonstrations that we've been doing. So if TCL-4 focuses in urban environments, higher density operations, sort of contingency management issues, back to the question earlier, those are all parts of the tests that we're doing right now during TCL-4. We just completed a a test in downtown Reno with live vehicles and simulated vehicles operating at the same time near buildings. That was last month, and then next month we're going to do another round of testing in Texas for TCL4.
Wow. How do you arrange for something? Excuse me, Reno, we'd like to do this test where we fly about 400 drones down the street.
It's a lot of work with the partners to kind of make sure that the test really produces the data that really helps further our research. So you could fly stuff randomly and then maybe not get the data that you actually need. So there's a lot of work on our side to really make sure that the test site operator generates data that comes from scenarios that include its particular characteristics, that saw very specific triggering events that then... And then it takes quite a bit to get to the end of the line, which is the data.
Right. And the test design is everything.
The test design is important. Yeah, you can mess stuff up if you don't design it properly.
Okay. Where can we find you here at Oshkosh?
We are in the pavilion.
International Federal Pavilion? You're in NASA Pavilion. I'm sorry.
NASA Pavilion.
Sorry, got them mixed up.
Yeah. And there's a large NASA tent in that pavilion.
And you got the inflatable lawn dart out front.
That's us.
Yep.
Yes.
There you go. All right. I want to thank you for joining us, Joey Mercer from NASA.
Yeah. I'm Fast Eddie.
And I'm Digital Dave. And this is EAA Radio.